couldn't help but notice as I was driving into downtown Tacoma that a gigantic cumulus cloud had settled over the waterway. And the fog horns were going off. You don't hear the fog horns that close. You usually have to be out a little bit. But we were in our house listening to the fog horns. And a cloud had pretty much covered everything except the dome. And you couldn't see the Port of Tacoma Bridge and or anything after it. And I couldn't help but thinking that that must be how it was in the book of Exodus. When the glory of God descended, how thick it was. I couldn't see anything. I was just trying to see the road. The other side of town, you could see the sunset. The Bible says that God descended, his presence descended in a cloud. And I guess I always think of that as a fog. You know, you're down to about 50 feet visibility. But I believe probably it was more like something that was so completely surrounding, it was tangible, that there was nothing that could pass through it. No light was passing through this. No visibility was passing through this. That's how thick, that's how powerful, that's how all-encompassing the power and the presence of God is. Now, I've never seen a physical manifestation exactly like that. But it doesn't mean that his power and his presence isn't exactly that real. And even though maybe I haven't seen it with my eyes like I want to see it, like I believe I'm going to see it someday, he's real. His power is here. His presence is with us. And it surrounds us. It wraps around us. And I want to put myself in a position where I can believe that. Because it's not about it being. It's about it being real in my mind. Anyhow, John 15. Going to John 15, 12 through 15, probably. Well, if you guys all want to turn around backwards, that projector is on. It works just fine. There we go. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do whatever I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends. For all things that I heard from my Father, I have made known to you. Three times in this passage, and I believe it's unique to this passage. I've broken my Bible here. I believe it's unique to this passage. Jesus uses the word friends. And he lets his followers know that he considers them his friends. Now, I don't believe that we have to make too much of a theological or mental leap here to understand, enough so that I'm not going to do a separate Bible study on this, to understand the concept that we are called as the New Testament church. And so he lays down some very simple criteria for what it takes to attain friendship with Jesus. Number one, he says, greater love has no man than this, than to lay down his life for his friends. You are his friend if he laid down his life for you. That's one of your qualifications. And remember, he said what he said right before he said this. I think this is very easily skipped over, even though it's not exactly part of this study. His commandment is that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no man than this, that a man lays down his life for his friends. This isn't a bunch of separate, random, scattergun thoughts. This is a narrative. So his new commandment was to love as he loved. Speaking of commands, the second thing, you are my friends if you do what I command you. Now, Jesus had just given us a command. And so I do think that this is incorporated into the overall picture of what he's trying to communicate in this chapter. Because it's easy to look at this and say, well, I'm doing what he commands. Well, are you obeying that commandment in verse 12? You love one another as he loved you. Are you obeying that commandment to the extent that is seen in verse 13? Now, that's a whole nother issue. Now, I'm not asking people to, you know, line up for the gallows here today and lay down their lives, but it's something worth noticing. And noticing for where we're going to go further in the study. So number one, you're his friend if he laid down his life for you. Number two, you are his friend if you keep his commandments. I don't believe that this means people that never get it wrong. One of the most obvious reasons why I believe that is because I'm looking at the group of guys he was talking to. This was the group of disciples that was just about to split for high ground when the thugs and the soldiers and Judas all came marching in to take Jesus away. And yet Jesus is standing here at least inferring that these guys are his friends. I don't believe this is talking about people who never get it wrong. I believe this is talking about people who are faithful in their walk with God. You're walking with God. You're on his path. You are doing your best to follow after his will, do his ways. Number three. No longer do I call you servants, for a servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends, for the things that I heard from my Father I have made known to you. Number three qualification for being a friend of Jesus. You're his friend if you've been told the things of the kingdom. There you go. He goes on and talks about quite a few other things in this discourse and leaves kind of this part of it. But he makes it clear in his little this little section here on friendship. Three things that are indicators of your friendship with him. I'll go over them again. Number one, if he laid down his life for you. Number two, if you keep his commandments. Number three, if you've been told the things of the kingdom. How many here fit these three criteria? You don't have to be shy or think, man, I don't know, man. This is a very easy test. This is a very easy test. We should be hitting like 99% or more here. If you're in this room, you already got all three, right? Because number one, Jesus died for every single one of us. Let us establish this fact. This is very true. If you do not know that tonight. Jesus died for you. If you have done something wrong in your life, and you have a burden of guilt that you can't get rid of, Jesus died for the things that you've done wrong. And there's forgiveness to be found. There's grace to be found. People that are keeping his commandments, people that are walking with God, they've decided to follow after his ways. If you haven't made that commitment, you can do it tonight. And if you haven't been told the things of the kingdom, well, we're getting ready to start. We're going to start way back in Exodus 33. I don't have time to give you every example in the Bible about a friendship with God, but I'll give you one. Always amazed by the stories of Moses. Moses and God had a conversation in Exodus 33. We're going to hit those first three verses. I'm going to read it here out of the New King James Version because the King James Version is broken, apparently, on my iPad. You guys will get it. The Lord said to Moses, "Depart and go up from here, and you and the people who you have brought out of the land of Egypt to the land which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, 'To your descendants I will give it.' And I will send my angel before you, and I will drive out the Canaanite and the Amorite and the Hittite and the Perizzite and the Hivite and the Jebusite. Go to a land flowing with milk and honey, for I will not go up in your midst, lest I consume you on the way, for you are a stiff-necked people." You know what's funny is I read this passage. I love this passage. I read it a million times, and I didn't actually get what God was saying until a couple years ago. I guess maybe I just didn't get it that he meant exactly what he said. And you got to put yourself in Moses' shoes. At this point, they were midway through the journey. And if Moses was like me, and I believe he was because he was a man, he was probably pretty tired. Tired of desert, tired of people, tired of complaining, tired of worrying about where food and water is going to come from. Man, I get tired of that kind of stuff. I might not be going through it literally, but figuratively, I've gone through a lot of it. And he's trying to lead all these people in this mess. Think of how tempting this offer must have been, or at least it would have been to me. And Moses had a friendship with God. He had conversations with God. He had arguments with God. He went rounds with God. He complained to God. He talked at God and wondered why audibly. God told him off sometimes. You know, I would jump off here in saying, one thing I've learned through my now 12 years of marriage, it's better to have a heated conversation than to have cold silence. When you have a fight, when you have an argument, that means there's something wrong. When no one's talking, that means there's something very wrong. And there's a value to just keeping the conversation going. So many times we withdraw. We pull back and say, "This isn't working for me, and I don't think it's working for you. And so I'm going to go do my thing, and I don't care what you go do your thing." And we can get along well without each other, you know. And, you know, every single one of us has felt that thing of, you know, I just need my space. I felt that way even with God. Now I'm the only one probably that's here that has felt that way. But, you know, I just had to reach the point where I don't know what to say anymore. And Moses, instead, he chooses to argue with God. He gets in fights with God. He brainstorms with God. He has these ideas, dumb ideas sometimes. And he's talking with God, and he keeps on talking with God. He doesn't leave it aside and say, well, you know, it's not working, and so we're going to give up on this. Moses had some kind of determination that he was going to keep the conversation going. Think of how tired he must have been at this point. And here's the deal. Moses, the agreement that I've made with the people of God, they're driving me nuts, and I'm not going to be spending any more time with them. And so what's going to happen is you guys are going to go on to the promised land, and I'm going to send an angel to go before you, and he's going to drive all the enemy out, and you're going to march into the cities that you never built, and you're going to farm on the farms that you didn't plant. And that's not even the deal that they got when God went with them. This was automatic. No questions asked. Results guaranteed. You're going to get what you want, and don't even try and come at me with that argument you had before, Moses, about how the people from other nations are going to say that God didn't fulfill his promise and he wasn't mighty enough. No, I'm giving you the deal right now. Everything you ask for, Moses, just march on in. Moses could have taken the deal, and he actually would have made it to the promised land. That was probably his one shot. What does Moses do? He fights back. He fights back. Look, I'm not recommending this. I'm not endorsing this. I'm not saying that you need to go and have it out with God. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm telling you about relationship. I'm not recommending that you go home and you argue with your wife either. But if that's what it takes. Do not come in on Sunday and quote me and say, Bishop, he was saying this stuff about, we got in this fight, and don't do that to me, man. Got enough problems of my own. And in verse 12 of Exodus 33, Moses continues this conversation with God. And Moses says to the Lord, see, you say to me, bring up this people. But you have not let me know who you'll send with me. You said, I know you by name, and you found grace in my sight. Now, therefore, I pray, if I have found grace in your sight, show me now your way, that I may know you and that I may find grace in your sight. And consider that this nation is your people. And God said, my presence will go with you, and I will give you rest. And the amazing thing about it is, Moses' rest wasn't in the promised land. It wasn't inside those borders. It was on Mount Nebo. He saw it from a distance. Moses had a deal, man. He had a deal. I'd have probably taken the deal. But he said, no, wait a second. God, you're giving me this conditional promise. I'm choosing to take your presence over the blessing. This looks great. I'm looking at all this stuff, and it's everything I ever wanted. But I'm not going without you. I think it was more than just Moses feeling a good feeling on the inside or the outside or whatever. I think it was more than that. It was about him needing the assurance that God was going to be with him. I love the awesome feeling that we get when God comes and visits with us. And then it feels so good, and we just have that warm, you know. Well, more than just having a feeling or having some awesome, great, fuzzy thing that makes me feel good. I want to have the assurance that God is going to be with me. I can guarantee you that's not my car alarm. If they want it that bad, they can have it. All right. We're going to hit halftime right here. Take a break from all the emotional stories. What is it that you want in a friend? Trust. Anyone else?
Honesty.
Compassion. Loyalty. Anything else? Companionship. Understanding. Trust, compassion, loyalty, understanding of me, someone who will take the time. Someone who will take the time, someone who will listen. Proverbs says this: a man that hath friends must show himself friendly.
Sorry to interrupt. Someone's alarm's going off out there. A man.
Oh, it worked. All right, back up here. What is it that you want in a friend? Now that all of you are listening. Loyalty. Compassion. Someone who takes time to listen. That's what I wrote down. What else did I write down? Have grace when you're not at your best. Common values. Just for a point of clarity, buddies share hobbies, friends share values. Buddies share hobbies, friends share values. I have dear friends that I don't share a single hobby with. I don't like to hunt. I have all kinds of friends who hunt, and it's awesome. I respect it. I have never been out hunting with them. Now, would you know what's funny about that? Now I'm veering way off. Friendship is so vital. That I have very seriously considered going hunting, which sounds like something I will hate. I don't like the cold, and I don't like getting up early in the morning. Does that disqualify me? Yeah. As long as we can hunt at 10:30 and it's 70 degrees. But no, I've seriously considered, and I believe that I probably will actually go hunting just so I can spend time with my friends. There are actually things in my life that I have chosen to like just so I can spend time with my friends. And I think people here, now that I mention it, can actually think and say, you know what? If I'm honest with myself, I've done the exact same thing. Whether consciously or just subconsciously, I think every single one of us has done that. That's just pointing out something that applies to the overall principle of what I'm talking about. Proverbs said, a man that hath friends must show himself friendly. And have you ever considered that the reason that you can't relate to God as a friend is because you can't relate to anyone else as a friend? I'm not trying to, step on any. I didn't have anyone in mind in saying that. Like I was praying and God said, oh, talk to him. You know, he needs to. No, that's not at all what I'm trying to get at. But I am reaching for someone. And I know people will hear you say a statement like that and cry foul and say, okay, wait. One has nothing to do with the other. They're two separate issues. A relationship with God is different than a relationship with a person. Yes and no. Because John 4:20 says, if you can't love your brother whom you have seen, how can you love God whom you have not seen? And so maybe it's something that you should consider. I'm not accusing anyone of anything. I'm just mentioning it. Mentioning it that maybe your struggle in connecting with God in a personal way is related to your ability to connect with your fellow man in a personal way. Because how can I look at someone whom I can touch and feel, shake their hand, spend time with? We're mortals. We both live in America, Washington, Pierce County. Most of us have biblical values. And yet I keep you at arm's length and say, hey, that's fine, bro. I'm good. How can you be like that and have it not carry over to your relationship with Jesus? I'm asking the question respectfully. It does make me wonder. It makes me wonder about myself. It's a convicting thing. And when we look at it in relationship to our connection with Jesus, and we see our need to be the kind of friend that we want to have, to even think that I could even try and approach to be the kind of friend that he's been to me. See, that's where it gets intimidating. I think sometimes that's where the separation occurs. Is that God is so great and so good and so perfect, and he's done so much for me. I'm spending my time coming to him acting like I'm not that good. And I'm not that considerate. And I'm not that perfect. And so how can I relate to a God that is perfect, that is kind, that is such a great friend? And we feel like there's no connection there. It's definitely not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing. But that does not change the fact that he wants to be your friend. And I don't know but that it might take time for a lot of people to connect with God on a personal level where you can really just talk to him, where you really can just tell him your sorrows, your hurts, what matters to you, why things make you upset, where you can actually talk to God and tell him how you think it should have been and why you're disappointed that it wasn't that way. I think everyone wants a friend like that. You can have a friend like that. And when you have a friend like that, it changes your life, because all of a sudden you change the things that you do because you wouldn't want to hurt your friend. And all of a sudden, it's not about, well, God is perfect And he's, bad things are going to happen to me if I do the wrong thing. And all these inner struggles that he's looking down on me. And it becomes about, God's my best friend and I love him. And I would never want to do anything that would hurt him or disappoint him. I just want to be close to him. You look at the stories from the Bible, the stories of Adam walking in the cool of the garden. Man, that sounds just amazing, you know? And then, you know, we know what happened. But then we read about Enoch. And he walked with God. And Abraham, there's another guy who argued with God. Moses, we already talked about. David. Think about David. Think about some of the things he wrote. How personal. In today's generation and culture, some of the stuff that he wrote would be for sissies, weaklings. Because they were so personal, they were so intimate. And it's just not cool. But David had a close relationship with God. You could tell it by the way he expressed himself about God. Think about Elijah. He has this conversation. He's there in this cave, you know, and he's talking with God. And God's asking him questions, and he's answering him. He's kind of being all whiny and everything. Like I said, some of this stuff, man, I don't recommend it. I don't recommend having a conversation with God. But the fact that these guys could have that conversation with God is mind-blowing. And it's a place that I'm not willing to go so often. Because I don't want to get that personal about it. God can just, he can just stay God over there. And I'm going to stay me. Look at Isaiah. He sees God high and lifted up. And they ask, who's going to go? And he says, I will. And God, and this, the Spirit of God comes down in that fire and it touches him. And you read the things that Isaiah wrote. That's a long book, man. I just got through it. The things that he wrote. So beautiful. The expressions of God and his greatness, his wrath and his mercy, his curses and his blessings. But it doesn't stop in the Old Testament. Look at Mary. She's found favor in the eyes of God. Look at John, who laid against Jesus at the table. And I could go on and on with names. Names from the Bible, names from people I know personally. God has always chosen to be close to his creation. John 15, later on in that same chapter that we were reading earlier, says, you haven't chosen me, but I have chosen you. He's chosen you. Like any other relationship, this is a two-way street. He may have chosen you, and you can choose not to choose him. But he's chosen you. And you're sitting in here this evening, and he's made you his choice. And people talk about favor. Favor is more than just getting a raise at my job. And I'm grateful for it. I am. And I'm grateful for the material blessings. I'm grateful for the health blessings. I'm grateful for all those things. But is there a greater favor than being chosen as the ones that he wants to talk with? I know, I think that, you know, I've heard it say the favor isn't fair, you know. I don't actually know if that's true. I think favor isn't logical is really what people mean when they say favor isn't fair. We know that the psalm says that God's justice flows like the tide. But it's not logical. He wants to be with me. Friendship with Jesus is the highest level of favor. And we read in the New Testament about agape love. It means in spite of. That's the kind of love that he loves you with. He loves you with the agape love, in spite of everything that I've done, in spite of all my flaws, in spite of my obvious lack of holiness in and of myself. I remember being in high school. I was a sophomore at McMinnville High School in Oregon. And I guess I wasn't as pathetic as the freshman. But sophomore is not the most glorious position to be in high school. And I was just a kid, I was 14, and I didn't know anything. I didn't know anything about high school life or whatever. And I remember, for some reason, I don't know if it was an accident, I don't even remember how it happened, but I was in class with this girl who was a senior. And her name was Kristen. And I remember it was so weird. She was nice to me. And when you're a sophomore and there's a senior in high school, that's like a 30-year age difference. Which, now that seems silly, but in that setting, there was this girl, and I think she was on the basketball team and everything, and she knew all these people. And we happened to have a class, like a math class together or something, which is weird because I was really bad at math. And so she must have been held down because... And I remember her being nice to me. I don't remember everyone from high school, but I remember her. And every time I would walk, if I would dare to walk down senior hall to get to a class and quickly sneak out before they, threw me in the bathroom or something, this girl would pull me aside and say hi to me. And I don't know, I don't know how she was, just like 18 or 19 years old or something. She was just being nice. And it kind of weirded me out, Why are you being so nice to me? Because I'm a sophomore and you're a senior and you just can't be nice to sophomores. And it's weird unless you've been to high school, which I assume most of you have. And you can remember high school, which I assume that probably most of you can't. But we were in high school. And this girl was condescending, not in a bad sense, but in a positive sense. She was stepping down from her level and showing kindness to someone who socially was at a lower level. When I first moved to the Portland area, I met who would end up being my future mother-in-law. And I was a real loser. I was just a kid. I was 15 years old at this point. And we just moved to the area. And this lady kept being nice to me. I remember we were there for a few months going to this church. And she bought me a Christmas present. She was a church secretary. And I didn't know her. I didn't know her. And she didn't miss a Christmas present until 2004, the year she died. Because she gave me a Christmas present after she died, because she had already bought it for me. As she did with all of us in the family. And she was, she was a faithful Christian, that she was doing good things and she was doing work for the Lord and all this stuff. And I was just a loser kid from out of town. And someone stepped out of their place and took the time for me. I tell you the story just to illustrate to you something that will help it make sense and the physical world. God has decided that he wants to be your friend. The fact that we can never quite admit to ourselves is that God likes us. Because it sounds presumptuous. It sounds like something that's pushing the boundaries of what I'd ever want to say about God. He wants to be around you. And just like David, we can say, what is man that thou art mindful of him? Why do you want to spend time with me, God? It doesn't make any sense. Because I'll never be as good as you. I'm trying to be good, and you know, it seems like sometimes the harder I try, the worse I am. And I want to be like you, and I keep telling you that I want to be like you, but when I look at you and I look at me, it's just two different things. And yet he's still saying, I want to be with you. I want to spend time with you. So I have to reach deep down inside to something that God gave me, to a gift that he gave me, and he obviously gave it to Moses back in Exodus. And just talk to God and be real. And say, God, well, if it's true that you like me and you want to be around me, and that I found favor in your sight, teach me your ways. Show me your glory, is what Moses said. I want to be close to you. I can't explain to you all the reasons why God likes you, but I know he does. And I know some people that are sitting here are going to say he's talking to everyone else but me. And you're wrong. You're wrong. God likes you. God wants to be around you. God wants to spend time with you. God wants to have a relationship with you. He wants to talk with you. He wants to have something special between you and him that is unlike anyone else in this room. Any other connection that he has with a human being, what you and him have is unique. And he's reaching for you. If you could understand how much truth is in that, if you could just believe it for just 1 second, it will revolutionize your relationship with God. It would change the way that you look at him. It would change the way that you see that he looks at you. Could we all, maybe we should stand. I know it's getting late. Could we all talk to him with our own words? Nothing pretentious, just be real here tonight. Oh God, here we stand before you. And if I'm going to be completely honest, I'm just as ordinary as any other ordinary guy. God, help me not to come to you with an attitude that is always looking at you way up there, thinking that you just might come down and be with me. Help me to believe it all over again, that you desire to be with me. You want to spend time with me. God, stir it inside my heart that you do like me, that you do love me, that I am yours and you are mine. I could believe it. I could believe it. I could believe it. Oh God, for everyone here, help them to believe it for just 1 second. And let that 1 second grow into something powerful. Let it grow into a relationship. Let it grow into some intimate conversations, some truth-telling conversations where they don't hold back anymore. God, I don't want to keep you at arm's length. I don't want to stand here and just keep my distance and hope that you keep yours. Oh God, don't pass by me. Don't pass by me. Don't let it be just another time where I say the things that I feel like I need to say. And then we go on all our way and hope that you're happy for it. Jesus, I want to be close to you. I want to learn what it is to be near you. Oh God, oh God. Bring us your touch, bring us your spirit. Hallelujah.